the kinos. And I think it's become more common in recent years to have people sharing more words of Torah, Torah that's obviously appropriate to the day. And I don't certainly want to discourage anyone from saying more kinos, or if you feel it's appropriate to say less kinos. We'll say a selection together. I hope to speak about four or five times throughout, slightly lengthier pieces of introduction. But the goal of the day, whether it's saying all of the kinos or saying some of the kinos, the goal of the day I think we can all agree on. And that is we're trying here in Tavshanayin Vav, a long way from the Beis HaMikdash, a long way both in terms of time and in terms of space from Yerushalayim Yer Kodesh. We're trying to feel something that we don't really know so much about. The first kina that we recite this morning begins with the word Shavas. And our scroll, at least the older edition of the art scroll, translates it as everything came to a standstill. It's paraphrasing from the fifth parak of Eicha. But the implication of the word Shavas is that everything stopped. It's like this very sudden stop. That whatever was suddenly taken away. Gemara says in Brachos, Amar Rav Papa, Agra de Beitamya Shtikusa. The reward for the day, that for a place of mourning, the agra, the schar that a person should hope to receive, if he spends time in a Beis Avel, will be in accordance with his silence. The person comes to a Beis Avel, there's nothing worse than going to pay a shiva call and seeing someone who doesn't have any sense of where he is or she is talking about all the wrong things. And the Gemara says, agra de Beit Tamya, the reward for the Beis Avel, is really to sit silently. And I think it's not so much a maila, that bizman hazeh. We have so many diburim, so many words to share. Again, in the olden days, people understood a little more what this meant. They sat, they cried, they said the words of great tzaddikim from earlier generations. And now we like to talk, and we like to watch videos, and we like to hear speakers and lectures and all sorts of things. And it's all necessary because of of the Rida Sadoros. We don't have any other way of even beginning to tap into the day. But the Gemara is telling us that there's a certain chashivas to understanding the silence of the day. Sort of this heaviness that just drapes itself on top of the entire day. And that's why the opening word of the kina is Shavas. Everything just stops. Before you get busy, again, whether you're going to say 45 kinos this morning, or you're going to say 3 kinos this morning. And again, every person should feel comfortable to go at whatever pace you like. But to understand that it starts with Shavas. It starts with stopping. It starts with pausing and understanding the bigger picture of what's going on here. Not to be Yotze Zayin by running through the kinos. Ratzvi Yehuda Cook, later in his years, had a very serious procedure performed, a difficult surgery. And after the surgery, the doctor said to him, he said, Rabbi, Harav, Kvod Harav, tell me, what hurts? Wants to make him more comfortable. He's lying there, he's writhing in pain. He says, tell me, what hurts? So without missing a beat, Ratzvi Yehuda Cook looks up at him and he says, Klal Yisrael hurts. So the doctor thought he misunderstood the question. He didn't understand what he was asking. So he says, no, but what hurt? What pains you? And he said, Klal Yisrael pains me. Today is the day when Klal Yisrael understands, maybe better than any other day of the year, that Klal Yisrael hurts. And the goal of the kinos is to try to find a way to somehow to take all of this brokenness, spanning all of Jewish history, spanning all of the history of mankind, and to try to fix it in some way. Let's learn a little piece from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov in the Likutei Moran. He connects three words. He connects the word teku, which we encounter when the Gemara is stuck on a question that's seemingly unsolvable. He connects it to the word tikkun, which of course means to fix something. And tikkun, of course, has the same letters as the word kinos, which we're about to recite. And Rabbi Nachman quotes from the Zohar Kadosh, "Shteiku anemar b'shas hu b'chinas mechuser tikkun." When the Gemara gets stuck, when the Gemara says teiku, we don't know where to turn. Everything just, the whole sugya is back and forth, and there's debates in the Gemara, and then finally everything just stops. Shavas. There's a sudden pause. that the greatest minds of the generation couldn't solve this unsolvable question. So says the Zohar, teku is really the word tikkun without the nun. That we've come most of the way, but we're not able, so to speak, to complete it, to bring it to its final tikkun. Shemechuseres tikkun. And therefore it's stuck, bechinas teku, it's stuck as a teku. Azahi nishpeles v'nechfefes v'nasim izeh bechinas kinos. And when a Jew feels so stuck, shavas, or like we laned last night, eicha, if you look carefully, after the word eicha is a psik, which is a pause. And I always thought it indicates almost a feeling like we could just scream out the word eicha and just stop right there. No, shavas, just stop, just leave it. It's unsolvable. So many questions grappling today. Are we angry at Hashem? Are we angry at ourselves? Right? So many confusing feelings of frustration. We want to speak. We don't want to speak. So when there's a teku and it can't become tikkun, so those letters unfortunately are forced to become kinos. And the goal, says Rabbi Nachman, of the kinos is that over time we're able to rearrange the letters, so to speak, to straighten ourselves out through those letters and to come back to tikkun. To be able to take this day and to transform it into a Yom Tov, which it's supposed to be. So on a Sefer, Sha'alu Shalom Yushalayim. That when the Belzer Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik B'Kadosh L'Vracha, when the Belzer Rebbe used to walk on the night to Shul, on his way to Shul for Eicha, he would turn his eyes towards the heaven, and he would say, Rebbeinu Shalom, Nachamol Tishavav. What's the tachlis of a Nachamol Tishavav? What's the point of another Tishavav? So how many years do you want us to do this for? Another year of Tisha B'Av, and another year of Tisha B'Av, and another year of Tisha B'Av. And the truth is, the time is not really a critique of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The problem is our own. The Medrash says, there's a small Medrash. Sorry, I'm so congested. There's a small Medrash that comments B'Yom Charon Apo, on the day of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's wrath. And the Medrash says, this has become the longest day ever. It was supposed to be Biyom. It was supposed to be a single day of Hashem's wrath. You know, like Bilam Lahavdil was able to tap in Kirega Ba'apo Chaim Birtzono. When Hashem gets angry, so he gets angry for a moment. Once in a while, if we're really bad, like we were, in this context, so Hashem gets angry for a day. But the Medrash said this is the longest day that's ever gone on. 2,000 years, and we're still dealing with this day. We haven't been able to find a tikkun, to turn the kinos into a tikkun. And in a certain sense, the Belzer Rebbe was fighting on behalf of Klal Yisrael, saying, maybe we don't know how to do it. Maybe this is how it's always going to be. But Rebbeinu Shel Olam, what do you get out of all this? If we would learn something from it, if we would change from it, so then at least we could move from it. But to be so stuck, to do it year after year, and therefore we have to believe in the possibility of Tikkun. It's interesting, 2 years in a row, Tisha B'Av itself, the 9th of Av, fell out on Shabbos. And I think it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's way of maybe helping us. You know, it's almost a chazakah. The hope that Tisha B'Av will be a Shabbos, it'll be not a Shavas, but it'll be a Shabbos. It'll be a Yom Tov, like the Navi Zechariah describes. And Shabbos tries very hard to fight off Tisha B'Av. Now, yesterday we didn't have Tisha B'Av. You're not allowed to show any outward signs of Avelus. Even the fact that some people use certain tunes from the kinos for Lechadodi on Friday night, or the fact that we incorporate some of the tune of Eicha into the laning, into the Haftorah. But even that was a very, many shuls do that, but there were those who were very against it. The Chazon Ish wrote in many different places, he was very against the practice of showing an outward sign of Avelus. It's Shabbos. You're not allowed to express any Avelus. Not in the way that we act, not in the food that we eat, not in the way that we dress. So Shabbos comes and it fights off the Beinu Mitzah. The Gemara says anyone who honors the Shabbos is zochet to a nachla b'limeitzah. Shabbos comes and says, I want to free you from your captivity. I want to help you. Now you have to understand who Shabbos is. In general, Shabbos is a very gracious host. Shabbos is very generous. So for example, when Rosh Chodesh comes on Shabbos, Shabbos says, listen, please, welcome. Shabbos steps aside, the Musaf steps aside and says, Shabbos says, Rosh Chodesh, you take the Musaf. Right? When Rosh Chodesh comes, Rosh Chodesh is given the honor of, so to speak, leading the way on Shabbos. Shabbos moves aside a little. When Yom Kippur comes on Shabbos, Shabbos says, I'll give up my Sudas for you. For Yom Kippur, I'm happy to give up the Suda. Shabbos is a very gracious host. Shabbos shows a certain flexibility, a willingness to work with whoever comes its way. But then Tisha B'Av comes, and Tisha B'Av says, can I come? Can I come on Shabbos? And Shabbos says, absolutely not. Shabbos says, I'm not giving up my meals, I'm not giving up my Shabbos clothing, I'm not giving up anything. And Shabbos, so to speak, goes out to fight for us. The Gemara says in Maseches Megillah that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi said that when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, we should just cancel Tisha B'Av. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, a very geuladic expression, because Shabbos is a taste of the geula. Why not just take that Shabbos and transition right into the Yom Shekula Shabbos? The Gemara says if Klai Yisrael would just keep two Shabbosos, we'd have the geula. But maybe that was last year at Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, again Tisha B'Av on Shabbos. If we could just get it right, then we could transition, we could turn the kinos into a tikkun. But unfortunately, we lost the battle yesterday. And now we're here. We're sitting on the floor. We're not wearing shoes. We're not washing. We're not eating. And we're doing exactly what happened in the times of the Chorba. Because the Gemara says in Tanis that Chorban Beis HaMikdash took place on Motzei Shabbos and Sunday. So this is Mamish Chorban Beis HaMikdash over again. And you can hear in the background, you can hear the Bel Zerebi walking to Shul saying, what's the point of this? What are we trying to get at? This day that keeps swapping on, B'yom Charon Apollo, it could have been a single day, but clearly the Medrash says it's the longest day ever. Obviously, we have to engage reality as it is. And now we're here, and now we have to deal with it. And I think, I want to emphasize this point, because many of us, unfortunately, the reality is because it's such a difficult day, both in terms of the physical challenges of the day, and in terms of just the spirit of the day, feeling connected to the day, there's a part of us that just wants it to be over with. We want to close our eyes and kind of wake up when it's over. So I want to read a piece from the Bir Halacha, from the Chafetz Chaim. This is in the Laws of Rosh Chodesh, where the Chafetz Chaim talks about the practice of laning. He's talking about laning on Rosh Chodesh, laning at other unique checkpoints of the calendar year. And he talks about the tochacha, laning the tochacha. The tochacha is the most brutal and painful words throughout the Torah. The tochacha also, there's a minhag, we lean in a low voice, we try to rush through it. We don't want to look the tochacha in the eye, so to speak. People are scared to be called for the aliyah, for the tochacha. And the Chafetz Chaim says, I've heard that in some communities actually, Chafetz Chaim writes in the Bir Halacha, I've heard of certain places where that when they come to Parshas B'chukosai, they don't read the Torah. They skip Kriyas HaTorah. They're so scared to read the words of the Tocha, which is literally describing a Holocaust, that they skip over it. And the Chafetz Chaim says, V'kama ros os. By skipping over the Tocha, you're making several mistakes. Echa she'in mekayim in Kriyas HaTorah, shita kana kaduma. First of all, you're failing to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah, which is an ancient practice. V'gam amasha amra kasav Musar Hashem b'ni altimas. But also what Shalom Melech says in the third parak of Mishlei, that when someone gives you Musar, you have to deal with it. To close your eyes and to hope that it's going to just pass on its own is not realistic, says the Chafetz Chaim. V'gam utos meikar, and the Chafetz Chaim says the whole notion that if I don't look at it, so then it's not happening. If I close my eyes and pretend this isn't happening, so it's not happening. Beis HaMikdash is not still destroyed. If we go and take a nap for 3 hours this afternoon, the Beis HaMikdash is still not destroyed. The Chafetz Chaim says, it's like a person who's walking in a dangerous area. And instead of navigating the thorns, navigating the ditches, this person decides, you know what? I'm too scared, I don't want to deal with it, I'll close my eyes. So is he safer or is he in more danger? The Chafetz Chaim says he has a greater chance of hurting himself. So to close our eyes from this day, and to try to just duck, and hope that Tisha B'Av is gonna pass over us, is not realistic. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is summoning us today, Kara Alai Moed, like it says in the first parak of Eicha, Kara Alai Moed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, declare today a Moed. A Moed, this is a Yom Tov. We didn't say Tachnun. It has elements of Yom Tov. Then Rabbi Zachariah says eventually it's going to become maybe the greatest Yom Tov. But what does the word Moed mean? What's a Moed? What's the Oel Moed? The Mishkan was called the Oel Moed. A Moed means a meeting place. A Moed means an encounter. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to us today, whether we like it or not, it may be a very uncomfortable encounter, but we have an achrayus to have an encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have a responsibility not to close our eyes, not to ignore the day. And again, each person in their own way, whatever it takes for us to feel, whether it's more kinos or less kinos, or it's more divrei Torah or less divrei Torah, or whatever it is, whatever it takes to read a book about the Holocaust, whatever it takes us to feel something, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is summoning us to an encounter. The great Mashkiach Rav Volbi, in his Alei Shor, in the second volume, has a piece on the Bein HaMitzar. And he contrasts the life of a Jew every other day of the year with Tisha B'Av. He says, the derech of Klal Yisrael, l'mahusa shel Torah kadosha hu kiruv. The goal of everything that a Jew does is kiruv, is being close. Being close to one another, being close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kiruv selukos, being close to the Torah. And everything that we do, everything that's asked of us all the time is about just getting closer. Getting closer and closer and closer to all the things that a Jew is supposed to have in his or her life. Says Rav Volbi, and then we come to Tisha B'Av. And Tisha B'Av, unlike the rest of the Jewish calendar, which are all checkpoints trying to pull us in, to bring us close, we come to Tisha B'Av, which is really built, he says, on the ruins of Cheda Meraglim and Cheda Egel. And he says that we encounter Hashem once again. It's a moed. But he says it's a moed of Richuk. Ha'egel v'ameraglim garmu b'chiyo l'doros. The original crime, so to speak, that led us to this day, created a b'chiyo l'doros. Today's not a day of kiruv hashchina. Today, he says, is a day lizboninus b'richuk hashchina. It's a moed. It's really a Yom Tov. It's an encounter with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara says in Makos, anyone who has an opportunity to celebrate a moed and doesn't do so is a heretic. Because the Maharal explains you're rejecting the opportunity. Hashem is reaching out to you. But here Hashem is reaching out to us in a very different way. He's reaching out to us by pushing us away. And that's part of the feeling that's so confusing of the day. Richuk shechina b'chorbanos u'koranios. To be able to encounter Hashem through a distancing from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Al richuk zeh anu mis'ablim b'ina mitzarim. This is what the whole 3 weeks are about. To be able to encounter Hashem by feeling distance from Hashem and feeling far from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore we begin with Shavas. We begin not by walking in and jumping right into the words. We began last night, Eicha, sick, pause, stop, think, try to understand what's happening here. You're not going to talk your way out of it. You're not going to close your eyes. You're going to wake up and the basic mikdash is going to be here. It doesn't work like that. The muscle, it's like the child, the parent calls the child aside and says, I want to speak to you. And you can tell when the children know the tone of the parent when they're in big trouble. So the parent pulls the child aside, takes him into a room to speak privately, to speak quietly. Right? And the parent says, you know, I got a call from your teachers today. And immediately the child starts with the explanations, right? The words start flowing. No, you have to understand, it was so-and-so who was sitting next to me, and he made me laugh, and then I fell off my chair, and that's why I was acting silly, and this and that, and right, all these explanations are, no, I had the homework, but then something spilled in my bag, and the homework got ruined, and the child's going on and on, but also the body language of the child, it's not just the words. You see, the child is moving about, and everything about, right, so uncomfortable in his own skin, so to speak, and then the parent says, stop, sit down, stop moving. So the child sits down, and the child's still, the words are still flowing, and the parent says, stop talking. Just stop talking for a minute. And at that point, the child starts to sink in. I'm not going to talk myself out of this. And I'm not going to be able to run away from this. And I'm about to have an encounter that's going to be uncomfortable. But it's for the sake of a greater good. That my parent wants me to be the child who I'm supposed to be. And now I'm cornered. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to turn. Remember, I was in a bookstore one year. Around the time of the Yom Noram. And I saw a book on the shelf written by a conservative rabbi. But the title of this book struck me. It was a book about the Yom Noram. And the title of the book was, This is Real and You Are Completely Unprepared. It's the title of the book about the Yom Noram. This is real and you are completely unprepared. I feel that's what Tisha B'Av is. So the Belzer Rebbe was saying, Nachamol Tisha B'Av, we don't know what to do with this. You want us to get close to Hashem, but you're pushing us away. Shava suru meni, the first three words of the kinos. Suru meni, go away from me, Hashem says. I don't want to talk to you. And then we're sitting here trying to figure out, so what do you want from us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I come from the beautiful, exalted world of Shabbos. Yesterday was Shabbos, where we feel so close to Hashem, and now it's Shavas. We're sitting on the ground, where we're trying to mourn. And there's nothing to say. I want to read a little piece just before we recite this kina. Someone lent me a book this past year. It's an English book written by a fellow named Ben Sherwood. It's called The Survivors Club. I think it gives us a little perspective on what we're doing here. In 1994, there was a boat with about 1,000 people on it called the Estonia. And there was a terrible storm, and the boat started to tip, and the boat eventually sank. And this fellow, this individual, Paul Barney, was on the boat, describes what that was like in those moments when he started to realize the boat was going down. And what was so shocking to him, and what the book talks about, is why some people survive tragedies and other people don't. He writes, so many fellow passengers seemed unable to do anything at all. People were just not moving, he says. They were frozen to the spot, almost waiting to be told what to do. As the lights flickered on and off, they looked like marble statues, pale and immovable. Why don't they do something? He asked one of the people on the boat, who was sharing the door frame with him that he was clutching, he was holding on to. Just don't think about it, the man replied. And he always thought about this. This fellow indeed survived, one of the few people who made it off the boat. About two-thirds of the people, nearly 1,000 people on the boat, about two-thirds of them never even made it off the boat. They were trapped in their cabins. They didn't even know what to do. And he writes here in this book, Paul Barney's story reflects the blunt reality of survival. Too many people perish when they shouldn't. They morph into marble instead of taking action. He goes on and he describes from 1987, the greatest fire that ever took and shook the London Underground. He says it was rush hour. About 30,000 passengers passed through the King's Cross Underground station at that hour. And this fellow describes that he was traveling, he was about to board a train, and all of a sudden he saw the thickest, greasiest, most cloying smoke I've ever seen. He didn't see any flames, he didn't know where it was coming from, it didn't make sense to him, but he realized immediately that something was very wrong, and without thinking he found his way up to the ground level and hurried to the exit. November 18th, 1987. What's so amazing, what's so tragically amazing, for some inexplicable reason, as the fire spread, trains kept on arriving in the station, sending passengers onto the platforms choked with smoke. Meanwhile, above ground, officials unwittingly directed passengers onto escalators that carried them straight into the flames. From his vantage point, this Dr. Leach, who was there and wrote about it, Leach recalls two other impressions. First, many commuters followed their routines despite the smoke and fire. That means a person could be in such a danger, but it becomes routine that this is how I always exit the station. Not realizing I'm walking right into the smoke, I'm walking right into the fire. That's what the bells are ever saying. Nachum al Tishba, we're going to do anything different this year, we're going to go through the motions once again. We're going to follow a routine with a tragic conclusion once again. They marched right into the disaster, almost oblivious to the crush of people, some actually in flames, who were trying to escape. Listen to what he says. One woman even approached a manager and asked matter-of-factly, "Does this mean my train has been canceled?" Talk about not getting it. One official was frozen in fear, unable to do a thing, with tears streaming down his face. 31 people perished in the King's Cross fire, the worst in underground history. An official investigation found that they were willfully ill-equipped and their overall response was uncoordinated, haphazard, and untrained. And this Dr. Leach, who again wrote about it as a psychologist, and he analyzed sort of this response, he referred to it, he came up with a name for this syndrome, so to speak, this feeling of shavas, where a person freezes when things are crumbling around him. He says he calls it the incredulity response. When a person's incredulous, and they're so surprised by what's happening that they can't even believe that it's happening. The Klal Yisrael, after all the Nevi'im that they had rejected, who warned them this is really going to happen, when it finally happens, there's a feeling, there's no way this really happened. There's no way that the Beis HaMikdash really was destroyed. And we're frozen in place. People simply don't believe what they're seeing. They tell themselves there can't really be a fire in London's busiest tube station. This really isn't happening. And he goes on to describe how a person can overcome, so to speak, that paralysis that a person sometimes feels when they're in this difficult moment. So Mirtz Hashem, as we begin the kinos together, let's try to not be so robotic about it. Let's try not to go through it again with the same feeling of just doing something by rote. Not to be like a child who's done something wrong. The parent says, "I want you to go sit in the corner and think about what you did. You should go to your room and think about it." The child goes to his room, comes back like a minute and a half later and says, "Okay, I thought about it. Now can I go play?" You have to be a little more mature than that, a little deeper than that. to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we really get it. To realize, like the Nesivos Shalom writes, that the worst state for a person to be in terms of Jewish growth, is to be satisfied, to be complacent with the way things are. To not believe that this Tisha B'Av can be different, that this Tisha B'Av, we have the ability to take kinos and to turn them into tikkun. So Mirtz Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should give us the ability, as we begin to recite these tefillos, we should say them, whatever we say, whether it's a lot or a little, the ikr is the kavanas halev, we should recite it me'omek halev. And then Mirtz Hashem, this year, we will in fact experience something a little bit different. Shava surmani shimri avarai sechiyamos hasimuni v'edri chavirai.